Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It was a dark and stormy night. It was April 8th, 1970, nearly midnight, when Elena Oprea left her waitressing job at a Bucharest restaurant and headed for home. It was raining hard as she walked down the streets, unaware that a monster was shadowing her every step. Needless to say, Elena never made it to her apartment. She became the first victim of the Butcher of Bucharest, a serial killer who was also nicknamed, more commonly, the Vampire of Bucharest.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Calderoni, this is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe.
I'm Caldoni.
And Caldoni over there.
I jumped on you. What did I do?
You totally did. That's cool. All right.
We're leaving it in. Screw it. Yeah.
No, that's fine.
We're like 2.5 years into this podcast, and we still don't have the intro down, right?
That's fine, man. Nobody cares about that. What they care about is the quality of our fabulous stories. And we got a fun story for this week, I think.
Fun's a stretch.
It depends on your definition of fun. It's kind of twisted and horrible.
It actually is messed up. And I was riveted. I'm excited to do this one. But yeah, fun, you know.
But it's not just blood and guts, so there's a bit of a mystery in this story.
There is
well.
Some mystery to this.
There
yeah.
is some mystery. Some unsolved questions, I would say.
All right, let's dive into it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. You want to introduce our perp?
Sure. Well, hey, I just got to warn everybody. This is, you know, as usual, we're flying by the seat of our pants, and I didn't get to look up as many of the pronunciations as I would. And after last week's issue with Lititz, Pennsylvania, Lititz.
Lititz.
I still can't figure it. People are sending me all kinds. Light tits.
Light tits.
Lititz. Lititz, I think, is how they say it. I'm pretty sure.
Well, let me tell you, this guy here is Jan. Or not
Jan. That's how you say that? It's not Jan?
No, it's not Jan. It's Jan. Yeah, Jan.
Jan.
Like
okay.
That. Yeah, I mispronounced it.
Right, so I'm just going to tell you, I didn't have as much time to look up the pronunciations. So Romanian listeners, tell me all about it. I love hearing from people about things I've mispronounced. I'm not being sarcastic. Try to be nice, but correct me. I'm going to do the best I can. Romanian is a beautiful language, and I hope to not butcher it.
Yeah, absolutely. And
right, so our perp.
Let's talk about our perp.
Ion Romaru, and he terrorized the city of Bucharest for over a year.
Ooh.
Ion used an axe and a metal rod to subdue and mutilate his victims. He bit flesh, pieces of their bodies, off of all of his victims repeatedly. And authorities believe he actually ate those parts.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably because the chewed off bits were not ever located.
Yeah, maybe he put them in his pocket or something, but
we don't know what he did with them. Like he didn't spit them out, let's put it like that.
I don't think they found any trophies in his place either, so
some of the victims who survived, some got away. That's almost worse.
Yeah,
testified that Ion stabbed them and then put his lips into their wound and drank the blood that was pouring out. This is, of course, how he got his nickname, the Vampire of Bucharest.
Yeah. It's believed by many that Ion inherited his serial killer DNA from his dad, Floria Romaru, because, as it turns out, his dad was a murderer, too.
Although that's fascinating.
Yeah, it is fascinating. There's been a lot of speculation on the heritability of serial killerism based on this. But anyway, Daddy was a murderer, but it wasn't known at the time. It was only figured out later. Jan was born in 1946. He was the oldest of three kids, and he was a witness to his father's abuse of his mother. He was pretty horrible, apparently, and pretty much happened every day. But luckily, when Jan was about 7 or so, I think, his dad finally left them and moved to Bucharest. So that's one of those instances where, you know, if daddy disappears, it's not such a bad thing.
If your dad's a serial killer, having an absentee parent might be a good call.
Of course, they didn't know it. They didn't know that at the time.
No, he was just a terrible parent.
Mm-hmm.
So Eon was an underperforming student, and he was forced to repeat the ninth grade. Eventually, he graduated high school and went on to veterinary school. As a devoted animal lover, I have to say that I'm glad he never actually became a vet.
Yes, me too. It turns out he was kind of a failure at veterinary university. Thank God.
That's good. Yeah. I'm loath to think what he would have been doing to those animals.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't leave him alone with my cat. God,
no. No. One of his professors at the vet university noticed that he was only semi-literate. And he actually had a pretty limited vocabulary. I guess that would explain why he wasn't much of a student at the vet school.
Yeah, he was.
He was actually forced to take his second year over again. Then he was forced to repeat the third year as well. So I'm going to say college was not for Eon. He was not the academic type.
Eon's college roommates didn't much care for him. They said that he was weird, and they avoided interacting with him whenever they could. So Jan sucked at his studies. He was socially inept, and he wasn't exactly a big hit with the chicks either. But in spring 1970, he finally found something he was good at. As we noted previously, the first attack of the vampire Bucharest was in April 1970. This was, of course, Elena Opria. But the crime was actually not as depraved as some of the subsequent ones, because one of Elena's neighbors just happened to show up, and Jan ran away before he could commit necrophilia and corpse mutilation.
Well, that's good.
Did I mention they had a little necrophilia in here and other fun stuff? Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, great. He was all around great guy.
What a winner.
Yeah.
As a serial killer, Eon showed about the same level of competence. That he showed at university. Most of his attacks didn't result in death. They were, however, still plenty brutal and markedly depraved. Mm-hmm. The pattern was that he would target waitresses. Presumably, many of them tended to get off work at late at night. They'd walk home through the streets. He would follow them to see where they were going, and then he'd pick a good spot for his attack. So he was, literally hunting.
Yeah, planning it out.
Pretty dark, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's scary stuff.
Yeah. The second attack was in June 1970. Florica Marceau, again, probably mispronouncing it, another waitress. he focused on waitresses in the beginning. Later on, he sort of diversified and went after women other than waitresses. But at first, it was kind of all waitresses. But Florica was headed home as well. She was almost home when Jan jumped her and beat her unconscious with a steel rod. He then carried her to a nearby cemetery where he raped her. And then he stabbed her and sucked some blood from the wound. Nice. But luckily for her, a truck driver just happened by. And so Jan took off, and Florica, thank God, lived to fight another day. So good for her.
Yeah. In 1970, Jan beat and raped.
July.
Well, July of 1970.
Yeah.
If you want to be specific.
Yeah.
So in July 1970, Jan beat and raped Olga Baraitu, yet another waitress. She was seriously injured, but she survived.
Hmm.
After this, Jan took a long break until February of 1971, when two women were attacked and raped, but they both survived. The attacks took place within 48 hours on the 15th and the 17th of that month.
Yeah, it's weird that he took such a long break. Of course, part of this might have been weather-related. He preferred to do his hunting and stalking on stormy nights. I think it kind of makes sense, thunder and lightning making a big racket and everything could cover up the sounds of your crimes. Also,
just less people out.
Yeah, exactly. And so so maybe it was dictated by the weather. I don't know. But it's weird that so many months go by, and then bam, bam, within 48 hours, he attacks two women.
Well, I guess it could sort of make sense. Like if murdering them was his ultimate goal, you could see him being frustrated on the 15th and just wanting to get right back on the horse and accomplish mm-hmm. his goal.
Yeah, maybe that was it. But again, he failed again. Next attack, he succeeded. The next attack was fatal. It was Fonica Ely, who was bludgeoned to death, and her corpse was then raped, nice, and then mutilated. And again, this was not a Jack the Ripper kind of mutilation with a knife. Instead, the vampire knotted her breast and her pubic area with his teeth. And again, as I said earlier, he apparently swallowed the pieces that he bit off. So what do we got here? We got like rape, murder, mutilation, necrophilia, cannibalism.
I feel like, Joe, do you really feel like there should be a term for cannibalism when you're not killing someone and eating them? That's what I think of as cannibalism. But when you're biting live chunks of flesh off like a hyena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe there is a term. I don't know. But certainly recreational cannibalism, although I guess there's no distinction there. You're eating human flesh, so that's it.
It is what it is.
But yeah. He didn't need the nutrition, not as far as I know. You know,
no, he was not trapped on a airplane in the Andes or whatever.
No, this guy really checked all the boxes. I think I can't think of any depraved activity he didn't do here. Right.
I'm sure if I thought of it, if I worked on it, I could think of something, but no, he's definitely covering the bases.
Yeah.
On April 8th, 1971, exactly 1 year after the first attack, the vampire celebrated the anniversary with an especially vicious attack on Jurgita Popa. She was stabbed 48 times in the head, chest, and limbs. Mm. Plus, he stamped on her ribs and broke them, and then chewed on her corpse for a bit. Plus all of that other sick stuff we named before.
Police by this time realized that they had a serial rapist, serial killer on their hands, and they pulled out all the stops to catch their perp. Their dragnet was called Operation Vulture. This included 6,000 members of law enforcement. I guess they drew in law enforcement from all over the country. 100 cars, 40 motorcycles, and also volunteers from the public. Public, as you can imagine, was a bit up in arms about this. But even with all those cops and vigilantes scouring the streets of Bucharest, the vampire spree was not quite over.
I just also want to say that this is actually kind of interesting to me because I've read a lot about, apparently not that much because I can't remember his name, but the guy they called the Red Ripper. He was terrible.
He was in Ukraine, right?
He was in what would be modern day Russia. It would have been a proper part of the Soviet Union.
Okay.
And they did not think that it was possible for a communist nation to have a serial killer. Mm-hmm. So he was able to go about his killings. Really, he made no attempt to cover his tracks or anything. And he was able to act with impunity for years because the police first weren't looking for him. And then when they started looking for him, didn't know how to do basic things like undercover patrols and the kind of stuff that law enforcement does. It sounds like Romania at least took it seriously and went after the guy, even if they didn't catch him. So I guess that's a good thing, right?
Yeah. Well, they caught him in fairly short order, but hang on.
Yeah.
So the next attack was May 1st, 1971, but the victim in this case managed to fend off the assault somehow and avoid being raped or murdered. So good for her.
Or chewed on. Or maybe he did chew on her, I guess. I don't know.
Yes. But the next 3 days later, unfortunately, the next one, the vampire raped and murdered Mihaela Ursu. A passerby interrupted him before he could chow down on the corpse, though, so he had to book. So, poor guy. He was apparently frustrated again. He decided that he hadn't had quite enough fun for the night. So 2 hours later, he found a lone woman named Maria Yordash and attacked her with an iron bar. But somehow she escaped.
Wow.
Good for her.
Yeah. These are some, I don't know, either this guy's terrible at what he does, which doesn't so much seem to be the case, or these are just some tough ladies.
There is, we'll talk a little bit more about this later. There is a definite variation in the quality and the competence of the attacks.
Ah, yeah, that's right. Okay, we'll get to that.
We'll talk about that. Yeah.
On the 6th and 7th of May, Ian Romero attacked and raped two more women. They managed to escape before they were murdered. These were Rimaru's last crimes. The long arm of the law was finally catching up to him.
Oh.
But the women of Bucharest didn't know this, and they were still living in terror. They didn't go out at night unless they were in a group, or at least, you know, with one big dude.
One big bruiser with tattoos and
something
and a leather jacket. Yeah. But Jan had gotten careless when he went out on May 4th and murdered Mihaela Ursu. He neglected to make sure that he had nothing on his person that could be connected to him. That's kind of fundamental, I would think. But so a note from one of his doctors, Octavian Yaneste. Yaneste. I don't know. But anyway, this doctor's note fell out of his pocket and was discovered later by the police beneath Mihaela's body. Oh. They also found a strand of his hair between her fingers. So that's kind of incriminating, don't you think?
Yeah. I think that's pretty, dumb. That's going to connect to him.
Kind of a dumb move.
Yeah.
Unless somebody planted this, of course.
Yeah. Ooh, well, let's talk about that. Yeah. The note didn't mention Yon by name, but it was mostly illegible due to water damage. But the date was March 1971. After consulting with the doctor, police had a list of 85 people who saw the doctor that month, which, of course, included Rimaru. When police stopped by Eon's dorm room at the veterinary university, he wasn't there, so they took that as permission to search the place because Ceausescu's Romania.
Nobody said no.
I don't think they would have taken no for an answer. I think they were searching that place.
Yeah.
They found no bloody weapons or anything like that, but then Eon came home. And he had a bag with him that contained an axe and a steel rod, which was exactly what the vampire was using.
That's a little incriminating, huh?
I mean, you'd imagine if he was a logger or something, you might expect, to have something like that. But I'm not sure what a veterinary student would be doing or walking through the streets of a major European city with an axe and a steel rod.
Yeah, you probably didn't have like a fireplace in his dorm room, for example.
Exactly.
Yeah. But interestingly, though, Jan had just picked these tools up from his dad's place. Mm. Apparently, his dad had confiscated them and taken them home. And so Jan went over there and got them back. Or perhaps his dad had borrowed them. I'm not sure. From the accounts of it. Some of the accounts that I've read of this, of course, were translated from Romanian. So
yeah,
it's a little hard to tell exactly what was going on. Like, was his dad aware of what he was doing?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I guess I'd have to know more about it, but if he confiscated the weapons, it seemed like, I mean, why would he do that? Right.
Yeah.
Like, if my dad found me with an axe and a steel bar, he might be like, that's a weird thing for you to be carrying around. But if he, why would he take him away from me? Like, leave that at home next time.
Or maybe he just borrowed them.
That's
true. I'm not really sure. This is something I'd never really gotten an answer to. Yeah.
Eon was taken into custody, but of course he wasn't talking. No. He did little more than stare into space without much emotion, apparently. And since he was not volunteering any additional information, the cops put an undercover officer in his cell with him in order to try to drum up a confession, get him to say something that he thinks is confidential. The officer posed as a thief who spent 2 months with Eon and managed to get him to fess up to over 20 violent crimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. Police suspected also that Jan's father, Floria, who we mentioned already, had a large part to play in turning Jan into an insane monster. Apparently the word had gotten out to them somehow that he was a really abusive jerk of a dad. And it is possible that Floria actually coached or counseled Jan. Maybe he actually, encouraged him to be a depraved serial killer type. I don't know. But there's no evidence of this. There is no evidence, but I don't know. I mean,
one
thing, there's the, well, we'll talk a little bit more about this.
We'll talk more about it.
Floria was a murderer. There was a consistency between Floria's crimes and Jan's crimes.
That's what I was going to say. I have a hard time believing it's just purely a coincidence.
Yeah, I don't think DNA really is that strong, that strongly effective, So something happened there. Maybe he gave him some handy serial killer tips, like, commit your crimes on a stormy, thundery night,
Yeah.
That kind of thing,
Yeah.
I don't know.
But we'll get to that. We'll talk about that more.
But here's the thing about Floria, though. The police were looking at him. While they were trying to pry confessions out of Jan, the police arrested his dad 3 times.
Oh, man.
And I guess they felt like maybe Floria knew more than he was saying. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was just a way to pressure Jan. I'm not sure.
That sounds
exactly
like something a Ceausescu heavy would do, right?
Yeah, but every time they held him for a little bit, but they had to release him because under Romanian law, close family members couldn't be compelled to testify against one another, so there was no point hanging on to him.
Right, right.
But, yeah.
In the end, the prosecutors charged Rimaru with 3 murders. Mm. I guess they figured that was enough to hang him and not draw it out.
Yeah, I imagine they probably could have charged him with a lot more than that. Lots of rapes, for example, and
Yeah, rapes, assaults, all kinds of horrible things.
Abuse of a corpse and, you know, all sorts of things.
Yeah, right. You know? All right. So anyway, Ian Romaru's defense hinged largely on the insanity plea, but an official evaluation stuck a fork in that one properly quickly. Mm. According to experts, mental illness did not cloud Romaru's judgment, and he knew exactly what he was doing all along. I mean, it makes sense.
Makes sense. There might have been, too, that they were like, you know, maybe he's crazy. We don't care. We want to see this dude hang. So yeah.
Who's that? Yeah. Jan would not have, he would have not been able to use the country lawyer's defense because Romania seems to have precluded that.
Yeah. It sounds like they just headed that right off. And, yeah. Well, and he probably was kind of crazy, but I say string him up anyway, right?
Well, you know? The difference is, do they know the difference between right and wrong? Do they know what they're doing is a crime is morally incorrect? Most countries use some standard like that.
Yeah, and I think he probably did know. So Jan was, after a brief trial, he was sentenced to death by firing squad. Ooh, yeah.
Ooh.
And his appeals all failed. So on October 23rd, 1971, police officers took Jan to his place of execution in the prison. Jan, sad to say, did not die with dignity. The three police officers had to physically drag him to the shooting spot. Then they tied him to a post. And I think for, you know, Ian, I think at this point, it's time to accept the futility of the situation and just stand tall and take it like a man.
Yeah, they're going to get you. You're like, why struggle? Even if you struggle and you manage to get away, you are going to get got at some point.
Yeah, but anyway, Ian didn't do it that way. He was, he was not dignified at all.
Well, F him.
Yes, yeah, pretty much.
After they tied him to the post, Romaru began to twist and move around the pole and attempt to make it hard to shoot. This is honestly sounding a little like a comedy. I'm picturing like Charlie Chaplin or somebody like trying to wiggle away from the bullets.
Well, Chaplin probably could have dodged the bullets, but Jan was something. I don't know. As talented. Yeah.
No, but Romaru begged for them to hold off until his father could come and witness the execution. And he said he was the only one who was guilty.
Yeah, quote.
So when he says he means his father.
To his dad. Exactly.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. But the request for his dad to show up was not granted. Jan's dancing around didn't save him from being shot either.
Mm-hmm.
It just resulted in all the bullet holes being in his back. Firing squad carried out the sentence. Jan Romaru was buried in an unmarked grave.
Mm.
So, yep, no marker for that boy.
He doesn't deserve it.
Seems appropriate, yeah.
So anyway, our story isn't quite over.
No, it's not, is it? There's a twist. Yeah.
There's a twist, and this is a weird one.
Yeah.
Exactly 1 year after Jan went on to meet his dear and fluffy maker, his dad, Florio Romaru, fell off a train and died. He was 53 years old, so that was an interesting anniversary.
Yeah.
Weird coincidence. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining we can probably rule out an accident given the date.
Yeah.
But was it suicide?
Yeah.
Was he like despondent because it was the first anniversary of his son's execution?
Or maybe it could have been something else. A rumor appeared in the papers and elsewhere that Floria had been thrown off the train deliberately to his death by agents of the government security forces. And this actually seems more likely, since I'm actually kind of doubting that Florio was all that broken up over Jan's death. Because from what little I know of him, he doesn't sound like he was a sentimental kind of guy. And so, the idea that somebody pushed him off the train seems a little more credible than suicide to me.
I think, But then you have to ask yourself, why would they do that?
Yeah, why would they throw him to his death?
Did they know something we don't? You have to wonder if maybe there was some kind of follow-up investigation, and maybe a few cops begin to wonder if they've gotten the wrong guy. Is it possible that Floria was really the vampire of Bucharest? When Floria's body was brought to the morgue, someone got a idea in their head and took his fingerprints and compared them to some of the fingerprints taken from the scene of several of the brutal rapes and murders from 25 years before, and it was a match.
Ooh.
Because let's talk about those crimes.
Yeah, 1944. This is World War II is still on. This is 2 years before Jan was born. Apparently, Floria went on a rape and murder spree. All these crimes occurred during stormy weather, just like the vampire. All the victims were single women with ground floor apartments. Also, they had all been beaten to death with a blunt weapon, and of course, raped. So. You know, kind of similar to the Vampire's Crimes, don't you think?
Really similar.
Yeah, Floria left behind shoe prints and fingerprints at his crime scenes. But even so, the authorities never caught him. And I think that World War II in Europe was a great time to be committing crimes, by the way.
Right?
Yeah, it definitely was.
That's until 1972, when there was World War II, and they got all of his fingerprints.
Yeah.
Which is some good detective work, but you have to wonder what made them check his prints against those really old murders.
Yeah, that's one of the things that makes me wonder. I mean, one of the accounts I read is like when his body arrived in the morgue, somebody noticed that his shoe size was the same shoe size as some murders from, years and years before.
Well, I mean, a lot of men have the same shoe size.
Yeah, I thought that's weird.
That's really weird.
You got to wonder what exactly made them think at this late date to finally check his fingerprints.
Yeah.
And what I'm wondering is perhaps they already had. Because after all, as we mentioned, Floria was arrested 3 times when Jan was in custody and under interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably when he was arrested, he was fingerprinted, correct? Mm-hmm. You would think. But it presumably nobody at that time thought to check them against any outstanding cases or cold cases or anything.
Yeah.
But perhaps after Jan's execution, somebody with a long memory recalled those unsolved murders from 25 years before with such very similar MOs to the vampire's MO.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And of course, Jan had not been born yet, so it couldn't have been him, right?
Right. I mean, maybe someone went and pulled Floria's fingerprint records and compared them to the old murders and those prints, and then voila.
This is before he got pushed off the train, right?
Right. That's what I'm saying. After the execution. So evidence that maybe Floria was actually the vampire of Bucharest, or at least part of the team. Because recall Jan's final words about his father. He was the only one who was guilty. That's what he said when he was
That is what he said. And I think everybody thought at that time that Jan was implying that daddy was kind of a poor role model. But maybe that's not what he was saying.
No, maybe he's saying he literally didn't.
Yeah. Could this be true? I mean, maybe the police started asking themselves this question, but they couldn't reopen the case of the vampire murders because that would have been a little embarrassing, no?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No doubt.
So, I guess they thought about it a little bit and then arranged for Floria to fall off a train.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
You could see that, wanting to save face, not wanting to look like they executed the wrong guy, not wanting people to feel like they had left the real murderer out there on the streets. They're like, let's just solve this right now.
Yeah, let's get us a little justice here. Yeah.
I mean, I think especially in a extremely brutal communist nation like Ceausescu's Romania, that would be true. But I could see cops in the United States doing that. But was Jan really the vampire? Survivors testified that it was him, in fact, that attacked them. Remember, there's a lot of survivors. So it's not like we don't know because all the witnesses are dead.
Yeah.
There were witnesses to the crimes. There were people who survived the attacks. They said that he was the one that stabbed them and then sucked their bloods from their bloods.
Their bloods? Yeah.
all the bloods they had. He sucked them from their wounds.
Yeah, but, I know.
But there were no witnesses to the necrophilia, the cannibalism, or the murders that were effective.
Yeah.
That's an interesting little wrinkle, huh?
Yeah. Not that I think Jan was totally innocent, but from the evidence, he was a sick puppy and really needed to be put down. So I'm not brokenhearted that he got shot, but
no,
was he the only vampire of Bucharest, or was there another?
That's an interesting thought that we are going to talk about
in theories
at length in the theory section, which comes after the most incredible commercials you've ever heard.
Oh yeah, you're gonna love these commercials.
No, they're gonna make you. They're gonna ruin Super Bowl ads for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
you're not gonna want to watch them.
Yeah, they're that good.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
And we're back. Hope you liked the commercials. And now it's time to talk about a few theories.
All right. So I'm going to start with theory number one.
Yeah.
It was all Eon.
Yeah. Possible.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I can see why people doubt this, but nobody saw his father out there.
Yeah. Right?
No one witnessed his father attacking people in this way. It makes sense that, you know, none of the murdered people testified against him because they were dead.
Yeah.
So maybe the default should be that with no evidence implicating Floria in anything recent, that Eon, we know he was out there on the streets doing this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see it. I don't necessarily believe it, but I can see it.
I could see it too. Another possibility, I think, another theory is that Dad and Eon were a team. You know, and
So when you say they were a team, like they were literally going out to hunt prey, terms like that, together.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And maybe it was like, you know, it's like, you know, they're following some attractive waitress and dad's like, okay, I'm calling this one. I got this one, you know? And,
right.
And in other cases, Eon would be like, yeah, I got this one, you know? And, but, there was, as I mentioned earlier, there was a definite, I think, difference, in the success and the competence of the attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And Eon, the, either because he was just incompetent, or maybe he just wasn't as brutal as his dad. Maybe he wasn't as, maybe the killings were actually done by his dad because his dad was more no nonsense and determined to kill, and Eon not quite so much. You know, perhaps, but you do know, like I said, it's like, it's amazing that in some of these cases, the brutality and success of these attacks. And in other cases, you know, he goes after a woman and she just, you know, bends him up, gets away.
Fights him off,
You know? And so you sort of got to wonder, you know, that that there's two levels of competence going on here, which. That could imply several different things. They were a team. They were going out together, or maybe dad just went out with Eon a few times, just show him the ropes. And then most of the attacks, it was Eon on his own.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think so. That's kind of one of the other things is like, you know, maybe he was just showing him the ropes and he was giving some advice, or maybe they were out there, you know, together doing this as a.
I just love it, though. Such a fatherly kind of thing to do. Okay, son, she's dead. Now we have sex with the corpse. Oh, boy. Isn't that just heartwarming? Father-son, you know, father-son activities, you know?
Oh, man. That's messing me up. I don't know. Something about that. You just plucked a string in me. I don't like that. That's messed up.
It's disturbing.
It's all messed up. I hate it all. What am I talking about? I don't like any of this. This is all bad. I was told we were going to have fun. This isn't fun. I'm not having fun.
I know. I lied. I said this was a fun episode. No, I lied.
It is an interesting mystery, though. I am genuinely fascinated.
No, it is. It is an interesting little mystery. And it is fun if you're sick in the head like me. But
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of going to go with maybe our last theory.
Yeah.
That there was kind of a combination, but mostly the last theory that I think there might have been a connection, but I do think they were both lone wolves.
Yeah.
I don't totally believe that Eon was being straightforward when he said that he was only his father was guilty, but that maybe he was trying to communicate that he hadn't actually murdered anyone.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe he was talking very specifically about the three murders that he was charged with.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Not just guilty in general, but of these three specific crimes, it was actually my father who did all three of them.
Yeah. Which is possible. You know, I wonder, maybe they were sort of in competition. Maybe they were actually out separately committing these heinous crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, there kind of are two patterns to the crime. One less successful, less competent than the other.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you look at how consistent serial killers are with their MOs. It's pretty rare that you have someone who gets fought off by a waitress and then is, you know, just kind of the Terminator a little while later.
Yeah.
Which is the worst metaphor I could have chosen, because the Terminator did get fought off by a waitress. But anyway, many times. But the point stands, right? Like, it seems different. It does not sound like the same guy to me.
Yeah.
And I would have just scratched my head about it. But then this thing with his father comes up and you have to wonder.
And then there's this point about his dad taking some of his murder tools. And then Jan goes over there and gets them back. I mean, so were they kind of sharing the tools? Mm-hmm. Another thing about his dad too is that he commits four murders in 1944 and then just never another one. That seems kind of weird.
That's a really good point, Joe. I think that is just absolutely silly. I mean, serial killers do have dormant periods.
Yeah. I think the weird compulsion doesn't go away. And, and even that long period between 1944 and, when these murders started in 1970, I mean, I suspect daddy might've killed a few random people here and there, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think he was dormant. That was, you know, 2.5 decades.
I don't believe that. Yeah.
I doubt that he killed no one. No. I mean, maybe he varied his MO a little bit, and maybe he didn't do them all in Bucharest. Maybe he, you know, when he was out of town somewhere else, he'd kill somebody somewhere else.
Well, and you also have to think of the historical context, right? Like, the war was really brutal in Romania, and the period after the war was almost as bad. There was, and I'm not some expert on Romanian history, but the process of rebuilding the country and communizing the country and the way that Ceausescu came to power in the early 60s, I want to say, I might have that wrong, was really brutal. A lot of people died then. The criminal justice system, the police system was not very well organized. There were murderers who got away with it.
Because, you know, the police maybe they were reluctant to look into a lot of things because they figured it was probably the security services that left this corpse in the alley, you know, so we can't be looking too deeply into this one.
Well, yeah, right. But I mean, then also they were really limited in their resources. They were limited in their training. And, you know, in a country where you're finding dead bodies left over from, you know, political stuff, gangsters who have influence, starvation and disease, it's hard to sort it all out. And I think that allows criminals to operate with this kind of impunity, you know, that, I mean, based on the guy's name, but the serial killer from Colombia, who during the, you know, height of the Escobar and Cali cartels was just kind of going around killing children without anybody really after him because they were all distracted, more or less.
Yeah, I know.
It kind of reminds me of that a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, and that wasn't just World War, like the aftermath. I mean, at any war, there's always score settling after the war and stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
Murders and stuff. So, yeah. Anyway, so, I don't know.
Let us know what you think. I'm curious to hear what people think. What exactly was going on between Floria and Ion, and who really committed these crimes in the 70s?
Well, I'm sure that Ion committed at least some of them, if not most of them, but, some of the more brutal, vicious rape murders, maybe his dad did those.
Or taught him.
I don't know.
I think that's kind of almost what scares me, maybe because I'm a father.
Yeah.
I am a father. I have a father.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of, you know, your dad sitting you down one day and be like, you know, son, if you really want to have a good time, this is what you do. Like, that's really creepy to me. That's really kind of chilly.
Yeah, son, yeah. Sonny, have you ever had sex with a corpse? Well, no. Well, hell.
There comes a time in every young man's life where you must take to the streets to murder, cannibalize, and defile. Right? Like,
yeah, I know, right? And so, that's, like I said, so heartwarming. But I don't know. So it's a mystery. And you know, if there's anybody listening who's like, maybe your granddad was a cop back in the day and he told you some stories, we'd love to hear from you if you had if you got any insights into this whole thing.
Yeah. If you were kicking it in Romania in the 70s, we'd love, actually, really, just in general, would love to talk to you about it, but especially if you were aware of this.
Yeah. But yeah, my personal belief is that I think Floria was involved in the vampire murders.
I think that's almost certain.
Yeah.
I see what other people think.
Yeah, but we'll see. But it's, again, a mystery, and I could be wrong, but no, I'm never wrong. What am I saying?
Never, Joe.
No. Oh, my God, no. All right, anyway, this has been kind of a short little episode, actually. We ran through this one kind of quick, but that's okay, because this leaves you time to, you know, go do other stuff with your day.
To go find the perfect thunderclap to add to your intro.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Do you got any more thoughts on this before we wrap it all up?
No, the only thought I have is we've been, we're running out of reviews, man. We need to get more people giving us positive reviews. Oh, it would help people. Us so much if you would do that.
Yeah, and ratings and positive ratings. Yeah,
please
do that. Yeah, come on, people. Come on, slackers. if you don't have any more reviews in you, you can always go recruit family members, coworkers, whatever, you know. And you've got a gun, no doubt. You know, they force them at gunpoint to write a good review. Yeah. I'll see what else. If you stay tuned, of course, you can hear the lovely Tess telling you how to find us via email and on social media. So there's always that. And please, you know, we love to hear from you. And if you want to send us fan mail and tell us how awesome we are, we won't object. anyway, and again, if you are from Romania and you got some inside poop on this whole thing, we'd like to hear from you.
But, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, and that's about it for me. So
that's all I got. We will see you guys next week.
Yeah, toodaloo, as they say in Romania.
That is Romanian.
Yeah, it is.
Write us a good review.
Yeah, ta-ta.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.